Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to welcome back Dr. Zorba Pastor. We're talking about new dietary guidelines for one thing with him. Dr. Zorba, of course, a retired physician, author, former host of the nationally syndicated WPR radio show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, has a new podcast. It's called Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. And you can join the conversation with your own questions relating to health and comments. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Dr. Zorba, welcome back.
It's great to be here. You know, I have to ask you, what is retirement?
You're not retired.
I'm asking you, what is retirement? That's exactly it.
Well, I don't think I'll start a podcast like you did. I mean, how's your podcast going?
Oh, it's really going well. We've had 100,000 downloads. We have a weekly update. We do 20, 25 minutes. We usually do five topics with Carl, my producer on WPR. And it's really going well. And the idea is you need good curated information because there are a lot of scams out there. And, you know, and the whole idea of even buying the podcast is people can then look at the information and make a decision for themselves. Yeah. And that's it. And that's actually what public radio has always been about. And that's what my podcast continuation is being about. And it's Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. And we've had a good response. So
it's great. Let's turn our attention to the new dietary right. guidelines. Last week, I think it was the Federal Department of Health and Human Services released a new food pyramid and dietary guidelines. So maybe first, how's the pyramid changed?
Well, the pyramid is upside down.
Yeah.
Literally, when you look at it, it's upside down. So let's go back for just a minute. Do you remember when you were a kid, they had the four basic food groups? Mm-hmm. Now, I always joke about the four basic food groups in America were chocolate, sugar, starch, and grease, which meant that the chocolate donut, glazed donut, was the best food. It had chocolate, sugar, starch, and grease. But it was dairy. The idea was dairy. Mm-hmm. It was meat. It was fruits and vegetables. Those basically, you know, and then it was rather fruits, and then it was vegetables. And that's at a time that we had vitamin deficiencies. So enter in then the food pyramid. And the idea behind the food pyramid was you had oil at the top. You had lots of grains at the bottom, saying grains were there. And when we started with that pyramid, our society became heavier and heavier and heavier. I mean, it really didn't work. So they went to myplate.gov. And, you know, for all of these things, what do people remember anyway about it? I mean, if I asked you what was on my plate, I would say, well, I mean, I don't know. It's like fruits and vegetables. And so the idea behind this is teaching. So this pyramid is upside down. But there's been some buy-in by the AMA and the Pediatric Society. So let's look at the good stuff in there.
Okay.
So first of all, get real food.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's wrong with that, right?
No, nothing.
Get real food. Michael Pollan wrote a book, you know, it has an idea, which I think is relatively true. If you look at a label and it's got more than five ingredients, it's not real food. And I don't know if five is the magic number, but we have industrialized food. We have the food industrial complex making food that basically you want to eat, but has too much sugar, too much salt. And so the idea behind this is whole grains, whole food, real stuff. And, you know, people have not, you know, they don't cook at home. So real food, not created food. So if you look at, I did some research a little bit on this. So 500 million people a week, 500 million people a week eat at one of the 40,000 McDonald's locations worldwide.
Woo.
500 million people. 900,000 people in Wisconsin visit Taco Bell every week. 900,000, and it's their Crunchwrap Supreme, which is filled with oil and salt and sugar. That's the number one thing. So the point is, we have to stop eating these industrialized foods. So that's at the top. That's the first thing that they have, which I think is good. The second thing is early allergen exposures. So let me give an example. Science, it fits and starts, you know, makes good decisions, makes bad decisions, changes the data. And so about 15, 20 years ago, the Pediatric Society said, we're starting to see more and more peanut allergies in kids. So they said, we don't want to introduce peanuts early because it's going to be bad. Mm-hmm. You know, do it late because we have allergies. Meanwhile, there are more and more allergies. It turned out we were wrong. There was a study done now about 5 to 7 years ago, a long time ago, in England. And what they did was they discovered that children in Israel had very few peanut allergies. And the mothers in Israel give them something called Bamba peanut. It looks like a Cheeto, but it's made with peanuts. And once children were 6 months old, they started feeding them this. Why? They just did it because kids love it. And it turned out that produces a reduction in peanut allergies. And there was a major study that showed that if you gave peanuts like this early on, you didn't increase peanut allergies, you decreased it. Okay, major study, 5 years ago. The feds 5 years ago should have actually come out and said, we should do this. We should start giving peanuts at 6 months of old. We should start giving peanuts. We should start giving eggs. We should start giving fish to children because it will actually be good for them and reduce their allergies. You know, you don't want to do actual peanuts where they chew it. You can't chew it, but a peanut product. That's good. That's good in this new pyramid, okay? Introduce that early. The next thing is dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you like skim milk?
No.
No. I don't like skim milk. You know, it's sort of colored water. How about 2%?
Well, it's better than skim.
That's exactly right. You got it. It's better than 1%. Come on. 1% is like close to skim. So 2% is what we eat. But I like whole milk. Well, now the idea is we should have whole milk. We should have full-fat yogurt. But we should have smaller amounts.
Hmm.
In other words, if you're going to have whole milk, you don't have to have full, you know, you're not going to have 4 12-ounce glasses of whole milk. But there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, I think they're actually right. You know, the idea about milk, there's a lot of, you know, we threw out the baby with the bathwater when we said we shouldn't have too much meat, we shouldn't have saturated fats, which is true. But it turns out milk has some properties to it. It has calcium. And the idea of full-fat milk, about 2 years ago, I switched to full-fat milk and I drink less. But I love full-fat yogurt and I don't eat as much of it. So this is now the new guideline that the AMA has endorsed. The other thing is protein. Mm-hmm. So you might not get enough protein as a young adult. I mean, you know, you're an older adult. So what did you have for breakfast today?
I had a yogurt, mm-hmm. and I had a cutie.
A cutie. Oh, a cutie.
Yeah.
The orange, a cutie, right, which is good. What do you think you'll have for lunch? What do you typically have for lunch? What's your typical lunch?
Typically, I'll have some nuts.
Some nuts, good. Nuts
I'll have
good.
Another fruit. I might have a banana, mm-hmm. and I will have... probably 2 fruits. Uh-huh. I'll have an apple. Yeah. I have an apple every single day.
So you're getting good servings of fruits. Handful of nuts is good. It's high protein. Nuts are really, really good protein. What do you often have for dinner?
To be honest, something I make on Sunday.
What do you make?
Once a week. I'll do a casserole. Uh-huh. I've got a casserole sitting that I made on Sunday.
I do things like that. You make a meal, and then you make it so you can have it during the week.
Yeah, I am by myself, casserole is going to last me many a day.
Perfect. So you may not be getting enough protein. In other words, as an older adult, if you do an analysis, if you go to Google and do an analysis, you may not be getting the 70 grams of protein that you should be getting. So, and I finally, about maybe a year ago, thought about this, and I was walking through Costco, you know, looking at Costco, mm-hmm. and there are protein shakes there. you for 180 calories, you can get 30 grams of protein. Okay, so it's not, it's very low calorie. A candy bar in America is generally 210 calories. So it's less than a candy bar. It's soy protein. You can either, you can get these protein shakes. They usually whey or, you know, whey and casein. So they're either a dairy product or they're soy. And you get 30 grams of protein, and it's an easy way to up the protein that I think you need, especially as an older adult. And so in the new food guidelines, they're saying we don't get enough protein. Now, they're recommending, you know, more beef, you know, which I, you know, I looked at this and I thought they don't realize the number one protein in America today is chicken. You know, mm-hmm. beef is more expensive, but chicken is a protein. Dairy protein is good, you know, but... you know, and then, of course, fish is good protein, and fish has good oil. That's excellent. But I think people should start thinking about protein shakes. That's the new emphasis in the food pyramid, that we're not emphasizing enough protein. And the old food pyramid did not talk about protein that much. I mean, we didn't emphasize that. Now, the stuff that is goofy...
Okay.
Is goofy. Is you should be using beef tallow to do some of your cooking. Beef fat. Where'd that come from? And where do you get beef fat? I mean, you go to Woodman's and you buy beef fat. I mean, I think that's goofy. But so I think the idea, we should still decrease saturated fats. I think chicken is the protein of choice. I think fish is the best protein that we can possibly get because we have fish oil. There are good oils, not just that. But then they say children should not have a cookie until they're 10 years of age. try to do that. No added sugar until 10 years of age. They're right in one way. You know, go to the cereal aisle, just walk through the cereal aisle at Woodman's and or any grocery store, and there's a lot of added sugar in the cereal aisle. I mean, cereals, cold cereals, are not the best thing for your kids. I mean, oatmeal is good and mm-hmm. maybe a little bit of sugar on top, but not too much. We should reduce sugar in our kids, no doubt about it. They do it. But the idea that you're not going to have a cookie until you're 10 years of age is too Puritan. You know, it's just too Puritan. So those are sort of the negative things. But I think the more protein idea is a good idea. I think real food, and we have to start cooking more and more for ourselves.
You know, it is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. I live by myself. I cook for myself, and I do what you do. I make a dish, and then I eat it throughout the week.
Yeah,
you know, it's that.
David, we'll get to David's email in just a second. A reminder, Dr. Zorba Pastor, our guest today, his podcast is called, took me a second there.
It's because I was on the radio for 35 years. That's right.
His new podcast is called Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. You can join in with your questions. The number to call, 800-642-1234. You can email the talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Zorba Pastor. His podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Great to have him with us. David emailed to say, doctors told us not to give honey to babies. Is this different from the peanut problem? Would kids be better off getting honey early, or is there a different reason honey is bad for infants?
Oh, sure. Well, the reason that honey is bad for infants has to do with botulism. You know, very, very rare cause. It's a rare event, and botulism can hide in honey. Used to be thought that only raw honey could hide it because, you know, raw honey has never been sort of pasteurized or heated. Yeah. But there still is a rare event. So the answer is no. No honey until the child is 12 months old. That's easy. Now, that's not the same as the peanut issue because You know, honey allergy is really pretty rare, and peanuts are common. Peanuts are used in so many products.
Yeah,
there's so many things. So the peanut thing is really different. It's an early allergen. So I agree with the no honey for babies. Now, when, you know, our kids were young, we put honey. It wasn't, I mean, our kids are in their 40s. You know, we put honey sometimes on the pacifier. And when they were in the car to quiet them down. I think about that now and I go, oh my God, how did we do that? So, you know, but the answer is no honey for babies, but you can go to the store and you can get these Cheeto-like peanut products. Bomba, B-O-M-B-A is one of the names of the company. And at 6 months of age, every kid should get it, period. They should start eating peanut products. And, of course, it can be, you know, it can be smooth peanut butter. You don't want the chunky stuff because kids can choke on it. Right.
Buck in Sturgeon Bay will give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What can you explain the difference between A1 protein and A2 protein milk?
I have no idea. I've never heard that. Where do you hear A1 and A2 protein milk? I'm not familiar with that differentiation.
Okay, well, I was having some digestion issues, and I like a lot of half and half with my coffee, and I started doing some research, and they kind of talked about the proteins in A1 milk. I'm like, well, what's this? So I go to the grocery store, and lo and behold, you know, there's the Fairlife, which is lower sugar, but this is completely different. It's called A2 protein milk. And they, you know, and I've met some people up here because in Door County, we have a lot of Europeans that live here. And they say that Europe is mostly A2 milk and we have mostly A1 milk and it's just not as easily digested.
Yeah. First of all, I'm not familiar with that differentiation. But the issue with milk digestion is usually lactose intolerance. That's like the issue. And lactose intolerance has to do with the sugar and has nothing whatsoever to do with the protein. It's usually a sugar issue. If you look at African Americans, they are generally more milk intolerant. Northern Europeans, from an evolutionary point of view, started having dairy 2,000 years ago, and so they're more lactose tolerant, so lactose intolerance is less. Some people cannot tolerate milk, but can tolerate yogurt, because yogurt is digested differently, and also they can do cheese. And the other issue with lactose intolerance, it can be the amount. So some people can have a little bit of cheese, but not a lot of cheese. But I don't think, I'm not familiar with this protein issue as being an issue. So
yeah,
can't answer it.
I just looked it up a bit. The A1 protein milk contains A1 beta casein protein, common in cows from Northern Europe. And it releases beta casomorphine.
Excellent. You're doing a good job.
Digestion potentially causing discomfort in both. And gas.
Well, see, you know something? That's the thing about science. Even at my age of 78, I can learn something about A1 and A2 protein. But I will, I'm going to do more research on that. And then I'm going to comment on that on my podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba. So, you know, I don't have, when I did the radio show, I don't look at things automatically, but I'll do more research on that and see whether or not there really is a difference in terms of what that is and then what it is with our milk. But, you know, the Europeans, you know, always say that our stuff is not as good as their stuff. You know, like the French go, you know, the wheat, you know, your bread is not as good as our bread because, you know, we're special. And some of it is true and some of it is, I don't know. It's just, you know.
Buck, thanks a lot for calling. Dennis in Stevens Point, what's on your mind?
Well, thank you. Nice to hear your voice again, Dr. Zorba.
Oh, thank you.
So,
thank you.
I'm about your age, and about a year ago, I came down. I'm in very good health, but all of a sudden, all my thigh muscles, hamstring, biceps, thighs, all these muscles were just like, what's going on? Hard to even get out of a chair.
Wow.
So when I finally got a physician and I explained to him in about 30 seconds this melody, he said, you have, I'm quite positive, polymyelitis rheumatica.
Rheumatica. PMR. Yep.
And he said, we'll probably try to send you to a rheumatologist. Mm-hmm. And then he did blood work. And the inflammation in all the markers were not real definitive.
They're often not totally definitive. But PMR is easy. I mean, it's a common thing. I treated it in the office a lot. I mean, we don't know what causes it. The treatment is prednisone for a period of time until it settles down. That's generally the treatment. What were you put on, by the way?
Prednisone. And I started out with, I think, 10 milligrams. Mm-hmm. That made me feel like I was 18 years old.
Uh-huh. Great. Larry and I are both laughing because we're thinking that'd be okay. 18 years old, like a movie.
Dennis, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
By the way, that is a PMR is common. You have something called elevated sed rate. It's a blood test with another test in primary care. We often saw it. You make the diagnosis. They're really these joints you can't get up, and all of a sudden it's magic. You get prednisone, it gets better. It can take 3 months up to a year to settle down. You have to be careful with the prednisone and how you use it. And the diagnosis is a clinical diagnosis. That's exactly right. So
yeah,
that it got better.
Can you buy that over the counter?
Prednisone, no.
No, only, I didn't think so.
Only by prescription. And you have to be careful with the drug. It's got good effects and bad effects when it first came out. So JFK, if you look at him before he became president, he was incredibly thin. He had Addison's disease. He did not, which means you were not making cortisone, basically. And then around that time, he was literally, you know, after World War II, he probably would have died. They figured out what it was. It's not PMR. They invented hydrocortisone, and then he was on it. And prednisone is a type of cortisone. And he was then able to survive with his life. But then they gave it for arthritis, which is great. It gets your joints are good. But if you take it too long and too much, it actually destroys the joints.
No.
So you've got to
be careful.
Right. You've got to be careful. Use it in judicious amounts the right way. And so he said he felt like he was 18. So that's why he felt so good.
Dennis, thank you for calling. Jolene in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Jolene.
Yes, I just wanted to give a little more information on that A1, A2 milk. Yes, it is a very real thing. Mm-hmm. Most of the cows in the United States are Holstein cows.
Oh,
Holstein cows, for the majority of them, give A1 milk.
Mm-hmm.
Europe has a lot more diversified breeds, and many of those breeds give A2 milk. Uh-huh. When my mom was young, they said all the farms used to have a Jersey cow for baby milk.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, baby milk was A2 milk, or Jersey cows give A2 milk, so it was easier for the babies to digest.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, if that gentleman has an issue, I don't know if he could find A2 cream, but... Yeah, there is a difference.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Like I said, I'm going to do some research in it. I'm not aware of that. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Jerseys, you know, the farms where I grew up out in the country and farm, our farmers, we had mostly Holsteins, but we had a Jersey and a Guernsey cow, and maybe that was the reason.
Maybe that was the reason, because, you know, so many of the farms were started by Europeans who came here.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the reason behind it. What's interesting is, which I want to look at is, so there may be a difference in the protein. The question is, you know, then what studies have been done to show there's a difference in the digestion with that? So I don't know anything about it. I'm in the dairy state. I'm going to find out about it. I'll talk about it in my column, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba, pastor, and I'm glad she chimed in about that. You know, I mean.
Me too.
Yeah, that's right. I've learned something, yeah.
Anne in Neillsville, your turn. Hi, Anne.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Larry Neeler. I enjoy listening to you guys. I do not enjoy cooking.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And things that other people make in the frozen food aisle of the grocery store taste better than my cooking anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, why cook when it tastes better from someplace else?
Mm-hmm.
But I try to focus on the low-calorie protein frozen meals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I feeding myself bad stuff?
You got to read the label. Look at the label. So if the label has 42 ingredients in it, there's a lot of preservatives. That's kind of the whole point. The whole point is, can you buy, you don't like cooking, which is fine, can you buy food that is frozen? So, for instance, freshly frozen vegetables, for instance, are often better than vegetables that you buy that look wilted. You know, I mean, so from a phrasing point of view, it's fine. So from a vegetable point of view within, you know, what you're going to buy, it may be okay. The question is, what preservatives are they putting in it? That's the issue. So I haven't looked in the frozen food aisle to look at that, but I would go, if I were like you, I would go to the web and I would look up, I put in a number of variables. I would go frozen meals with minimal ingredients and no preservatives. And then I would go to the grocery store and I would look at the labels and see what's in there. And if it doesn't have much in the way of preservatives, that's probably a better thing to eat.
Yeah.
That's the way I would bird dog it or figure it out.
And, you know, I got to tell you, I usually have one or two of those sitting in my freezer. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Sure.
Because if you get home late.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and I already used up my hot dish from the weekend.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to throw one of those in and
so,
3 minutes later.
So maybe now you should look at the label of the different frozen foods and see which one has fewer preservatives and go to a big grocery store where they have a big variety.
Yeah.
And then
I shop at Woodman's usually. So.
Woodman's is great. And then do some due diligence of looking through all of those frozen foods and see which one might be the best.
Yeah. You know? And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Dennis in Two Rivers emailed to say he remembers you, Zorba, recommending the use of dietary supplements for 2 weeks, then stopping for 2 weeks, and then repeating that. This is to check whether supplements are beneficial or have placebo effects. Would 2 weeks be enough to determine someone's threshold levels for a therapeutic benefit, he wonders.
Well, that, by the way, is an excellent question. You know, I usually say 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and repeat that 3 times. You know, it depends on how someone feels. I think generally a 2 weeks, if you're going to feel something, you're going to feel it. On the other hand, there's nothing wrong with 1 month on, 1 month off, and repeating that 3 times. But often if people are taking a supplement, let's say, for joint pain, if it's going to do something, it's generally going to do something within 2 weeks. So I think the two-week threshold is pretty much there. But other people may argue that it's not long enough. So you can do 1 month on, 1 month off. But I'm going to stick with the two-week idea, because if I put somebody on a medication, like an anti-inflammatory medication, I might use a cream, I expect that I'm going to see a response in 2 weeks. You know, if you look at diclofenac cream, which is an anti-inflammatory cream, so you're not taking an anti-inflammatory that you don't want to take it because it may upset your stomach or it may affect your kidneys. Generally, if you're going to see a response, you're going to get it in 2 weeks. So I'm going to stick with the 2 weeks.
Yeah. If you're taking something like fish oil.
Well, but people take fish oil for arthritis.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to do it. Now, from a heart disease point of view, that's a different thing. You're not going to see it. You take it from a prevention. And fish oil has some plus minus things. I always say you should eat fish. And the way you can tell the difference is take a bite of salmon, really good salmon, and compare that to a capsule of fish oil. Poke the capsule of fish oil and put that in your mouth. See which tastes better. You know, get some fatty fish. Eat sardines. I love sardines. Do you like sardines, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Sardines are great. They have a tremendous amount of fish oil. And sardines are inexpensive. They're easy to get. And a can of sardines is not many calories. I think it's 180 or 250 calories. It's a high protein. Sardines are a high protein, good fat dish, easy to do.
What about, let's see, what was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to ask you about. Oh, tuna fish. You know, a can of tuna fish. Do you get it with the water added or
I get it with the oil.
Or with the
oil. I get
it
with olive oil. The olive oil is good. And I now buy a more expensive tuna. I can't remember the name of it. You can get it at Woodman's. It costs more and it tastes better. It's called something like Toronto. It's not Toronto, but it starts with a T. Tonito. I think it's Tonito. I had it once, and I can't go back to regular tuna. It costs more. It's at Costco also, but it's an incredibly good taste. So I used to get water tuna, and that's like to me skim milk now. I want to get a better taste. You know, that's the way it is.
John in Wisconsin Dells, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Okay, so I have a personal issue problems with my digestive system. But every time I would talk to my doctor or the barman, because I get these hot sweats that go with it, too, like out of nowhere. Like, I just get really hot. It can be cold outside. I just start sweating. But it only lasts for, like, 30 seconds to a minute. Can that be related to a digestive system?
Well, maybe. You know, that's... These things that affect our body. So it may not be the digestive. It may be what's added to whatever you're eating. And, you know, a lot of these things have not been studied. And so, people often who are gluten intolerant but do not have, do not have sprue, don't have gluten intolerance, which is such that, terrible gluten intolerance, get rid of wheat and they say they feel better. So from a dietary issue, you experiment and you see, because there's no absolute one way, one way or another. So difficult to say.
Yeah, makes sense, John. Thank you for calling. Jan in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi, guys. I love both your shows. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just had a comment on Dr. Pastor's looking at the labels on frozen foods, which is excellent. It's perfect. Another thing that might help is an app, and the app is called Yucca, Y-U-K-A.
Uh-huh, Yucca.
It's free to download, and if you pay a $15 a year fee, you can take that little scanner, and you can scan the barcodes of any of those foods, and it'll tell you what's in the
that's fabulous.
It'll give you a green dot, orange dot, or a red dot, depending on, good, better, best, whatever.
Oh, you may have a green dot, orange dot. Oh, that is great. So it's called yucca.com. So it's a green dot.
It's an app. It's green dot means it's excellent or a score of like 80 out of 100 or more.
It's great. I love it.
And then
if
it's got some food additives or too much salt or too much fat, it'll drop it down to a red or an orange dot. Anyway, the other thing it's good for is cosmetics. I've really found it helpful for discerning what's in these cosmetics.
So wait a minute. So if I get a green and I use that cosmetic, I'll look like I'm 18 again? That's what I want to know. I want to get rid of all the wrinkles in the face so I can puff out so I can look like I'm 18. I just want to know, that's the cosmetic. It's not. How about I'd even go from back to like 50. That would be okay too.
Well, I tell you what though, with cosmetics, I mean, I saw some articles about the amount of lead in some cosmetics as an example.
Yes, right.
And Jan, that's probably what that Yucca app may be pointing to as well for cosmetics.
It'll do food, and then it'll do a product that it has information on. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But that is great. That is a great idea. Yucca.com. I've not heard of the app. I think I may have heard of other apps. And, we've gotten used to the fact that we don't have to pay for apps. $15. I mean, think about that. Yesterday, I decided I was going to stop at my favorite Chinese restaurant and just get a dish because I didn't feel like cooking. Mm-hmm. So I went home, got the dish, and the dish was $15. Now I can eat that for a couple of nights. I didn't finish the whole dish. But $15 over is not a, it may seem like
a buck a month.
It's a buck a month. And if it's going to improve your health, that's an excellent idea. So that's That is excellent. I'm going to, you know, I'm learning a lot on this. I've got to do A1 protein and FDUYucca.com. I'm supposed to be the one giving advice.
Well, that's the beauty of this program.
Yes.
You know, you
right.
get a lot of good advice from people. And I mean, you can take it right. or not, but you can right. look and yeah. learn more. And
right.
why not?
Yeah. And that's what public radio really shines, because you have people who are educating themselves, listening, and then want to give that information back about that and talk about that. And that's kind of that's why public radio is great.
Jan, thank you very much for your comments. I wrote it down too. I'm going to take a look at that app.
Well, you should use it when you look at frozen entrees
yeah.
In the grocery store and look at that and see which one is the best, which
yeah.
company. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jan. Let's go to Courtney in Rio. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. Thank you both for having a great program. Quick shout out to my husband who's listening. Hi, Vic. thank you both for being here. my question today is about vegan protein for mm-hmm. toddlers. We have had to currently adjust our diet for medical reasons, mm-hmm. and I'm struggling to get her to eat some of the whole foods that we shoot for. Mm-hmm. We do an organic whole food diet, so quinoa has not been a hit yet. Maybe throwing against the wall.
How old is your youngin?
She is 3 years old.
Okay.
Throwing against the wall.
It's been fun to play with. Maybe not to eat, though. We've tried black beans. That's not a hit. Try to incorporate hemp seeds because mm-hmm. those have a good amount of protein and like smoothies. But just wondering if you have any other suggestions for vegan whole food proteins.
That's a tough one. You know, I mean, it's very tough. It's just tough because a vegan diet is limited. But people just do that and they then insist they try to, you know, they try to sort of fuss it up with the right type of basic things that can be on there that make it taste better. You know, you're not disguising it, but you're adding to it. Just like we add hot sauce to things because we like the taste of hot sauce. I think it's how you make it, how you prepare it. So if you give something vegan that's tasteless, kids are not going to eat it. But if you find a sauce that you can then, it's not disguising the vegan, but it's making it more digestible. That would be the way that I would do things. Now, the French are really interesting. They're not into veganism, but there was a book, I can't remember, about French food and how a woman went to France with her kids and discovered that they introduced many, many different foods early on, not at 3 years of age, but earlier, it's at 6 months and 1 year of age. And it's that variety of foods that can make a difference. But I would sauce it up. That's what I would do. If I were looking at, but and that's it. Yeah,
quinoa. 3 years old. Would you add honey?
Yes, you could add a certain amount of honey. But once again, then how sugary are you going to do it?
Yeah,
could you add a ketchup, a vegan ketchup, to things? You know, that's what I mean from other sauces. Once again, read the labels and see what it is, and that's what I would suggest doing.
Courtney, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. And just a reminder here, you're listening to Dr. Zorba Pastor, his podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us here on WPR News as we visit with Dr. Zorba Pastor. And great to have him back to answer your medical questions or concerns. We've talked a lot about diet. And, of course, we're taking other questions as well. 800-642-1234. Linda in Sheboygan has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Hi. I have two kind of issues. First of all, the fellow that was talking about the sweating, mm-hmm. I have that, and I think it's related to an autoimmune illness I have.
Mm-hmm.
I never noticed it until I was diagnosed with this autoimmune illness, and it's just very weird. It can come on very fast, can have sweat running down my back,
mm-hmm.
and after a while, I'm fine.
Right.
So it's,
and you're exactly correct. It can be, there are a number of things that can be related. It used to be one of the symptoms of tuberculosis when TB was common in our society. It was sweating. One of the things you would do is check someone for TB. TB is not very common here, but in India, where I do some humanitarian work, it's common. And if somebody sweats, you immediately, you know, question TB. And TB, of course, it's because of the immune response to that. So good point. Very good point.
And also, I think I may have something called gastroparesis.
Mm-hmm. Gastroparesis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the doctors are kind of blowing me off. So I'm just wondering if you have an idea of foods to eat that will lessen the symptoms.
Well, gastroparesis is where you don't, your stomach doesn't really empty, the gut doesn't empty the right way. Come from a variety of things. There's a drug called metoclopramide, an old drug, which has been around for a long time. Reglan was the name brand, useful for this. We often don't recommend it forever because it can have side effects with it. But I think you ought to Google gastroparesis. Look it up. This, by the way, from a food point of view, I don't know any specific foods, but this is a good time to use AI. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would go to ChatGPT, and then I would go to Gemini, which is which I think is either in Google or Microsoft. And then I would go to Microsoft, and I would put in, when you use AI, AI works very well once you get to three or four more variables. So I would put in gastroparesis. I would put in your age. I would put in foods that work. I'd probably put in what's bad, what's good, and then I would do some searching because there may be something out there. There may be a text or a study or something else that might recommend foods that would work for you. And this is where I think AI has a value, because I might do that in my office. There's an AI app that physicians can use called Open Evidence, which is excellent for this. But I would go and look at that, because this is a good example. They might find, yeah, this food is good, that food is bad. And then I would try it out, and I would try it out for a month or two and see what happens.
Yeah, there you go, Linda. Thank you. Pamela in Ridgeway, we'll go to you. Hi, Pamela.
Hi there. Thank you. I have a question. I am wondering if there are new dietary guidelines for dealing with hypertension.
Well, first of all, the hypertension, the dietary guideline is the DASH diet, the D-A-S-H. So the DASH diet is diet, I can't remember, hypertension, the H stands for hypertension, the D stands for diet, and it's an acronym. It's been around for years. It's been updated and changed, and if you have hypertension, that's the guideline to follow, period. It works well if you follow it correctly, and it's a reduction of salt, obviously, and it's an increase in potassium foods, which are generally fruits and vegetables. But the DASH diet has been shown to reduce blood pressure by 5 to 7 millimeters, or rather 5 to 7 mg per, 5 to 7 drop in systolic and diastolic blood pressure, but it's good. So I do the DASH diet. I wouldn't look at the inverted pyramid. The DASH is the way to go.
Alice in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciated your point about cooking for yourself. I'm 73, and I cook almost all of my own meals from scratch, and I think it's one of the best things that I do for my health. But the question I have is, I was recently diagnosed with Hashimoto's, mm-hmm. and I think that
Hashimoto's,
that's
thyroiditis, right?
Right. It's, mm-hmm. I think it's inflammatory, and mm-hmm. so I've been trying to reduce inflammation in my diet. I'm trying to go gluten-free and do some other things as well, and I'm wondering if you have any other suggestions for diet in dealing with Hashimoto's?
Not specifically. And there have been questions about Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It's an inflammatory disease that works in your thyroid. So your thyroid over time, doesn't do what it should do. And then you need thyroid replacement. That's what it is. And a lot of people who have hypothyroidism, low thyroid, actually have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. We don't know exactly what causes it. We're not really sure. Why does the body attack itself? There's no evidence. I've never read anything that shows that diet will do something to reduce that. And the answer with that is you then eat thyroid replacement. And so you go in the office, you get something called the TSH test, and then you have to take thyroid replacement because your thyroid's not producing as much. And that's what most people, that is the most common cause of low thyroid. And luckily, we can make synthetic thyroid, which makes a difference. When I started out with medicine, thyroid either came from bovine sources or pig sources. So in the slaughterhouse, they would take out the thyroid, you know, put it down, and they would basically distill the thyroid from either the cow or the cattle. Mm-hmm. And that's what we would have. And it was not as good as it was not as good as the present thyroid. You would have thyroid extract, which came from that. And some people still now believe that that's better than the synthetic thyroid, but synthetic thyroid works well. So good luck. I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Lee Rayburn, our technical director, found talking about the tuna, back to that for a minute. Mm-hmm. Tonino.
Tonino. Excellent. It is. Thank you. It is the best. If you love tuna and you're willing to spend that extra money, get the. Do you like tuna?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever? You've got to try
it. I've never
this.
Had it.
You got to go try it. Try it in the olive oil. It's unbelievable. I had it maybe 25 or 30 years ago, and then I didn't know the name of it. And then one day I found it at Woodman's. I actually found it at Walmart and then at Woodman's, and I'm stuck on it. Thanks for looking that up. It's the best. I don't get any money from advertising them at all.
All right. Well, let's turn to Bob in Janesville then and find out what's on Bob's mind. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, everybody. Enjoy the show very much. I have been diagnosed with GERD, and I've had some throat scopes and had, it says there are some damage there. And so I was prescribed pantoprazole, and that was very upsetting to my stomach. And I'm on famotidine.
Mm-hmm. Famotidine.
And my question is, I understand the issues involved, but my stomach seems to be bothering me more with the medications than without. And I don't understand that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you look at GERD, there's some things that we do actually in terms of eating. So first of all, no food after a certain time before you go to sleep, 2 to 3 hours before you go to sleep. No alcohol, no coffee. There really are GERD things that you should avoid. Alcohol is a big no-no for GERD. And then small meals at the end of the day. So you want to look at all the lifestyle things. If you go and look at Mayo Clinic GERD or you do UW Health GERD, you'll get some good information on there on what to do. Now, famotidine is called an H2 blocker. It can work well. The PPIs like Prilosec, which is over the counter, are better and work better. One, the famotidine blocks the receptors that the acid, stomach acid, goes on. The PPIs like Prilosec slow down the acid. And for some people, both work together. You take a Prilosec, you know, like you did, in the morning on an empty stomach, 1/2 hour before you have anything to eat. That's the way to do it. If you're not doing it that way, you should do it that way. You'll get a better result, and the famotidine in the evening. But I don't know why it's worse for you, but then you have to go to lifestyle issues.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Bob, thank you for calling. Therese in Green Bay recommended, this is back to hummus for a minute for the younger child. Hummus is now available in various flavors, she says. And so there may be one the child likes the taste
of. Sure, exactly. And it, once again, we were talking about flavoring and saucing what you have. And so when you look at hummus and you look at things of that nature and you look at nuts that you're feeding with the kids, it's what you're actually putting on there that can make a difference. Textures and taste. And children have their own things that they like. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Did you like tomatoes as a kid?
Yeah, I did.
See, I hated tomatoes. I hated them. I love tomatoes now, but I hated tomatoes. But I love ketchup. Yeah.
Dr. Zorba Pastor, our guest today. It's great to have him. And he'll be coming by every so often to talk with us. And his podcast, in the meantime, go to his podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Quick reminder, tomorrow we're going to talk about mining on the program, and then we'll be taking a look at sharp-tailed grouse in Wisconsin with someone from the DNR, and then we'll talk about the herbicide Roundup with historian Bartow Elmore. So that tomorrow. But in the meantime, thank you for listening, and thanks to our team for creating our shows. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.